Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from North or South, or from the East or West? My heart is filled with love.
Used to be inaugurated on this day, but we'll start with Churchill. Winston Churchill was one of the greatest orators of the 20th century, and his oratory still rings true today. We don't have his like nowhere in the world, as far as I can see, and of course I was trained by one of the best, Professor Dolly Thornton of Wright College, who taught Marilyn Kim Novak, that was her first name, and she tutored some actors. She was a graduate of Northwestern University in Chicago, and I think she tutored Rock Hudson and some others. This is Churchill's most famous post-war speech. He made many speeches, and one we'll try to find when he was talking about Islam, but we'll talk about this one today, and here it is. At Fulton, Missouri, in 1946.
It is my duty to place before you certain facts about the present position in Europe. From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent. Behind that line lie all the capitals of the ancient states of Central and Eastern Europe. Warsaw, Berlin, Prague, Vienna, Budapest, Belgrade, Bucharest, and Sofia. All these famous cities and the populations around them lie in what I must call the Soviet sphere. And all our subjects, in one form or another, not only to Soviet influence, but to a very high and in some cases increasing measure of control from Moscow. An attempt is being made by the Russians in Berlin to build up a quasi-communist party in their zone of occupied Germany by showing special favors to groups of left-wing German leaders. At the end of the fighting last June, the American and British armies withdrew westward in accordance with an earlier agreement. to a depth at some points of 150 miles upon a front of nearly 400 miles in order to allow our Russian allies to occupy this vast expanse of territory which the Western democracies had conquered. If now the Soviet government tries by separate action to build up a pro-communist Germany in their areas, this will cause new serious difficulties in the American and British zones and will give the defeated Germans the power of putting themselves up to auction between the Soviets and the Western democracy. Whatever conclusions may be drawn from these facts, and facts they are, this is certainly not the liberated Europe we fought to build up, nor is it one which contains the essentials of permanent peace. On the other hand, ladies and gentlemen, I repulse the idea that a new war is inevitable, still more that it is imminent. It is because I am sure that our fortunes are still in our hands, in our own hands, and that we hold the power to save the future, that I feel the duty to speak out now that I have the occasion and the opportunity to do so. I do not believe that Soviet Russia desires war. What they desire is the fruits of war and the indefinite expansion of their power and doctrines. But what we have to consider here today, while time remains, is the permanent prevention of war and the establishment of conditions of freedom and democracy as rapidly as possible in all countries. Our difficulties and dangers will not be removed by closing our eyes to them. They will not be removed by mere waiting to see what happens, nor will they be removed by a policy of appeasement. What is needed is a settlement, and the longer this is delayed, the more difficult it will be, and the greater our dangers will become. There never was a war in history easier to prevent by timely action than the one which had just desolated such great areas of the globe. It could have been prevented, in my belief, without the firing of a single shot, and Germany might be powerful, prosperous, and honored today. But no one would listen. And one by one, we were all sucked into the awful whirlpool. And surely, ladies and gentlemen, I put it to you, surely we must not let that happen again. This can only be achieved by reaching now, in 1946, this year, 1946, by reaching a good understanding on all points with Russia, under the general authority of the United Nations Organization, and by the maintenance of that good understanding through many peaceful years, by the world instrument, supported by the whole strength of the English-speaking world and all its connections. Neither the sure prevention of war, nor the continuous rise of world organization, will be gained without what I have called the fraternal association of the English-speaking people.
Well, that was Winston Churchill at Polson, Missouri Westminster College. A little problem here. I don't know what's going on. I'm sorry about that, folks. Now, what's going on here? Today, March 4th, was the day the presidents were usually inaugurated, and there are a lot of interesting things today. But let's deal with the Berts. Portugal has become the sick man of one of the sick men of Europe. And I hope I got that right. And today is the birthday of Prince Henry the Navigator, one of the greatest Portuguese statesmen, explorers, and he was the guy that Lisbon is one of the furthest points out into the Atlantic, and he's the one that started all the great explorations for Portugal. Portugal was broken off from Spain, I think, in the 10th century, if I'm not mistaken. That brought about his work brought about the acquisition of Brazil. Places like Cape Verde Islands, Mozambique, in Africa. The Portuguese are one of the last countries in Europe, in the world, to abolish slavery. And they had one of the longest reigning dictators. I think it was Salazar was his name. And also that's where Fatima, Lady of Fatima for Catholics who follow the apparitions of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And the nun who was one of the three children, Jacinto, Francisco, and the other one, the one who became a nun, she claimed that she had a message from the Virgin, which she gave to the Pope. And that would be, and according to Catholic belief, is that Russia would be would end communism, because at that time, in 1917, around that time, Portugal was not involved in the war, nor was Spain. But communists began the revolution against the Romanov dynasty and were successful, Lenin, Stalin, all those people. So right now, Portugal has major financial problems, and they're looking for some kind of a solution. It's become the poor man of Europe. It's unfortunate. Today also is the birthday of a great Polish patriot who came to America along with General von Steuben about the same time in the American Revolution, Kazimierz Pulaski. And, of course, there are many. There's Pulaski, Tennessee, many cities and streets in Chicago. One of the biggest streets is Pulaski Road, I think on the northwest side, if I'm not mistaken. And a very famous patriot who came to America and helped us win our freedom from the Brits. This is a British scientist and physician. Benjamin Waterhouse was one of the first physicians to work on developing a cure for smallpox, which was rampant at that time. And then among the other birthdays today, in 1888, which was a great year for singers, and we'll get into that another day, some of the greatest singers in opera were born in the year 1888. Lottie Lehman was one. Frieda Leiter, quite a few. Anyway, and I think Lawrence Melchior, who was Danish. And another Scandinavian was born today, the great Knut Rockne, a great football player, coach, who was coaching for Notre Dame. He was not Roman Catholic. He, I think, converted near his death. He was on a plane with Wiley Post, Will Rogers, and himself. Knut Rockne, they crashed in Alaska back in the 30s, but we have his famous, found it in the archives, his famous locker room speech, which unfortunately wasn't ready for today, so we'll play it Monday. This is a famous bar in San Francisco. I never knew the origin of it, but Lefty O'Doul was born today, and he was a person who organized baseball for the Japanese. The Japanese are very big on baseball. They did instead of cricket. Harry Helmsley was born today. I think he was born Jewish and converted to Lutheranism. This happens quite a bit with Jews who, quote, are moving socially up. That's the phrase was used. And, in fact, Catherine Meyer Graham, her father was Jewish. She became a Lutheran. She died recently. She was the executive that ran the Washington Post. I don't know what that problem is. Sorry, folks. Anyway, what the heck is that? Anyway, she became a Lutheran, and she also worked briefly at the San Francisco Chronicle, which was started by two Dutch Jews. We'll get into that another day. Harry Helmsley, of course, his notorious wife, I forgot her first name. She was a horrible person to work for, and she had the Helmsley Hotels, and she loved Harry. 60 Minutes did a spread on her. And Harry Helmsley, I think, was a developer of the Empire State Building. Let's see, who else today? We have Jane Goodall, who worked in Africa to try to save the chimps from the predators and the hunters and all of that. And we have Paula Prentice, who was born in, I think, San Antonio. Her birth name was Ragusa. I think she was Italian or Hispanic. And then another sportsman, Italian named Boom Boom Mancini. He was born today, great boxer. Great musician, Bobby Womack, great popular, wrote a lot of good music. And another musician, Antonio Vivaldi, who composed quite a few concertos for mandolin during the Baroque period. Excuse me. Among the deaths today, great author, Russian author, Nikolai Gogol, Georg Telemann, another Baroque composer, and the guy who founded the Disciples of Christ, of which Ronald Reagan's mother was a member. His father was Catholic, but he was a lapsed Catholic. Alexander Campbell, I guess he was Irish, Scotch-Irish, he founded the Disciples of Christ. There, I think the senator from Texas is one of those. I did ask half humorously a member of this church, what is a disciple of Christ? And I couldn't get a straight answer. And then we had the death of Alexander Stevens. He was the vice president of the Confederacy. He never did anything, couldn't do anything. And then one of the great names connected to the Grand Ole Opry, Minnie Pearl, died today. And then of the events today, I don't know what that is, folks, I'm sorry. We'll have to check our technical things. Jeanette Rankin, it's a lot of firsts for females today. Jeanette Rankin in 1917 became the first female member of Congress from Montana, which is one of the first states to grant women the vote. And she's the only member of Congress to vote in both in World War I and World War II to vote against the Declaration of War. We had the first Native American become in the executive branch, Charles Curtis. He had a great voice, and he opened the 1932, I think it was, Olympics in Los Angeles. And he was brought up on a Catholic Indian mission, but he died a Methodist. So technically, I guess you could say he was actually the first Roman Catholic, even though it was fallen away, in the executive branch. Then we have another advancement for women. Frances Perkins was the first female member of the cabinet. She was Secretary of Labor in FDR's administration. And then in 1954, getting back to Ronnie Reagan, he married Nancy Loyal Davis. Her father was the health commissioner of the city of Chicago, Dr. Davis. Among the other events today, Charles II granted a charter to William Penn to set up Pennsylvania. We had, this is interesting, as I said, March 4th was the day that usually presidents, the old date that presidents were inaugurated. On this date, President Washington had his second inaugural, and he gave the shortest speech of all the inaugurals, 133 words. The longest speech was given, inaugural speech was given by President William Henry Harrison, Tippecanoe and Tyler II. He fought the Indians. He was the father of Benjamin Harrison, another president. He gave his speech as the longest recorded one in presidential history, in the history of the presidency. It was like, I think it was 8,443 words. He gave the speech bareheaded. He caught pneumonia and died within 30 days. And his vice president, John Tyler, became president for one term. And then John Tyler later left, became, quote, a rebel, and served, supported the Confederacy during the American Civil War. Another first, in 1791, the first Jewish member of Congress was elected, Israel Jacobs. We also had several other firsts. Little Jamie Madison, the one who lost the War of 1812, he was the first American president to be inaugurated wearing clothes which were totally made in America. Thomas Jefferson was the first president to be inaugurated in the what is now the Capitol. And then in 1837, the city of Chicago was incorporated. So we're going to see they now have the first Jewish mayor, Rahm Emanuel. We're going to see how if he's going to be another Daley or do some of the things that Richard Daley did to help John Kennedy in 1960 win the presidency. There were 10,000 mysterious votes that swung the state. Richard Nixon decided to be a good sport, so-called, and did not contest the alleged 10,000 votes, I think that's what it was, which Tony Accardo, the mafia, supposedly supplied these, quote, voters and votes. And then we had, in 1844, James K. Polk, who said he would serve only one term. He's the guy that acquired a lot of land, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, all of that during the Mexican War. He said he would serve one term, and his term ended on a Sunday. But his successor, General Taylor, who was a hero of the Mexican War, couldn't be inaugurated on a Sunday, so he had to be inaugurated on a Monday. It is claimed that a guy named Atkinson was actually president for one day. We'll get into that another day. And then in 1881, California passed the first Plant Quarantine Act, and that was to protect California agriculture. And then another first, in 1911, the first socialist was elected to from Wisconsin, Victor Berger. And, of course, Milwaukee had a socialist mayor. I forgot his name for about 20 years. Also, Golda Meir was a socialist, and she was a school teacher who later became the prime minister of Israel. She, I don't know how she handled her citizenship, if it was dual or what. But Milwaukee has always had this strong socialist bent, as it were. Maybe it's because of all the Germans there. And, of course, now we see that socialism has become communism. They call themselves progressives, as I said in an earlier show. After World War II, the American Communist Party went into their political closet and came out as, quote, progressives, but it's just another one of their scams, and those of us who know history knew what happened. Among the things that are happening in judicial scandals in California, there was an article in the San Francisco Weekly, a reputable publication whose head office is in Arizona, and they exposed how some California judges, not all, and the staff attorneys and clerks have been setting up cases so that accused pedophiles get possession or get custody of children. And this does happen where a couple will get into a fight, and one or the other, usually the woman, will accuse the husband of sexual abuse of the children. And a lot of it's true, and there are some that are probably not true. In fact, a famous lawyer or infamous lawyer here in Northern California, in a divorce case down in San Mateo County, because I had to go down and look at it for my law firm, was accused by his wife of molesting their children. Now, we don't know if that was true or was just malicious or just to get back at the old man. I won't mention his name right now because I don't have the case in front of me. But among the other cases, this is in Santa Clara, and this has come up recently. We were contacted on the Brian Hennessy, Joey Palma case. Joey Palma was a 16, 17-year-old boy, Latino kid, who was sexually seduced by this sexual predator, a guy named Brian Hennessy, who also molested children up in Northern California, was involved in AK-47 trafficking. He lured this kid, just like Juan Pifferi did with Stephen Neri, the 18-year-old sailor. I don't know if drugs were involved, but I was contacted by Joey Palma's family. Joey Palma was prosecuted and was found guilty. I don't know. I never saw the transcript of that case because it was in Santa Clara County, but their lawyers did send me the autopsy, and it looked pretty gruesome. But Hennessy, according to Joey Palma's brother, who's trying to get his record cleansed, I think he got a 7-year term, and he left the state, emailed me and said that Brian Hennessy had raped a 16-year-old boy. Now, that's the claim. It wouldn't surprise me, but interestingly, a lot of the papers, San Jose Mercury, San Francisco Chronicle, San Francisco Examiner, censored and suppressed this case. You won't find it in their archives. However, a gay paper, this is a surprise, did expose it. You know, this was well done, and it's honest reporting. Even though I may disagree with some of their other agendas, at least they reported what had happened and balanced the report in an article. and we'll publish that article. We have it in the archives. But what's going on is we have the courts have been infiltrated by these radical gay homosexual organizations, and that was exposed by The Recorder, which is a legal news and court case reporting paper. It's part of a national change, and we'll put that up on our YouTube site at Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas. But what's happening is the courts in California have been infiltrated by these politicians and political groups, sexual preference groups, crotch politics. And apparently these people have no code of ethics, or if they do, I haven't seen it. Like the federal courts, they do have a code of ethics for the court personnel, lawyers, staff attorneys, clerks, administrative staff. But it's apparently rampant. And in fact, a guy named Michael Nava, who was an attorney in the California State Supreme Court, is also a writer of homosexual pornography. And he ran for against a sitting judge in San Francisco County, and he lost. And I was told by a former official of the California State Bar, who I did some work for, that all the judges ganged up against Nava, not because he was gay and a writer of pornography. In fact, several of them were gay. But it would set a precedent, which they didn't want to deal with, where an outsider could come in and run against a sitting judge. So he lost. I don't know. It was not reported that he was a writer of pornography, but he was defeated, and all the left-wing rags like the Bay Guardian supported him for this judgeship, but he was defeated. I don't know what he's doing right now. So these are some of the things that are going on. Now, Monday we'll do the Newt Rockne locker room speech, which we found in our archives and timely, but unfortunately we couldn't get it up on time. And then if you have a chance, go out and get Jack Cashel's book, Deconstructing Obama. It's very well done. He's a great researcher. He's an editor, and he's done a lot. He's written several books, and the anti-birthers, so-called, have attacked him. But nobody is answering the question, why is there so much concealed and not publicized on Mr. O? This has never happened. The whole history of the American presidency, we knew a lot about these people, where they went to school, whether they served in the military, where they were born, what their previous professional record biography was, if they were in Congress, what bills they voted for, didn't vote, any personal scandals. We don't see any of that. It's just too many unanswered questions. Now, the issue of a president not being born in America came up once before. I'm not talking about in pre-American Revolution times, because technically we're under Britain and we were colonial. We're talking about Chester Arthur, who was accused of being born in Quebec, Canada. It was never proven, but he succeeded one of the presidents, and he was the director of the Customs House of New York, which was a great source of graft. And he was a mediocre president, one-termer, and his contribution to the language was Arthurian, where he had these great mutton chops and how he dressed. So we're going to end with what we usually do, how the world is, and that is politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
Guys, go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
Well, that's the thought of Democrats who are very angry about what's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio and other places. So we'll see you Monday at 5:30 to 6. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Thank you for listening, and this will be up on the archives. You can download it on your computer, excuse me, and iPod. Good night.